Welcome to National MI's Educational Sales Podcast Series, hosted by mortgage sales consultants Pat Sherlock and Bobby Welch. This podcast is brought to you by National MI University. We are committed to delivering quality education. Now let's get started.
Hi, everyone. This is Pat Sherlock.
And this is Bobby Welch.
Hi, Bobby. This is a great topic that I'm really excited about today, because if there's one thing that all mortgage bankers default to is trying to hire teams. And so I think that hiring and building teams of originators is probably the number one strategy at most companies. And as a result, I think it's probably a good idea today to really talk about, in a big way, kind of the whole issue of hiring and building teams from kind of a more global view. And then in future podcasts, we can go more in depth on the different topics. But the strategy of hiring teams, I would have to tell you, has to be the number one strategy at most lenders, wouldn't you say?
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, getting good at this topic, it's a lifelong pursuit. I mean, you can work on this the rest of your life, which is great.
Yeah, it is true, I would have to say. And I think as a result, it's probably a good idea to talk about the mistakes that you and I see when we're out at lenders turning around their sales staffs, because this whole strategy of hiring and building teams is one that really does make or break your company. So let's talk about kind of the big mistakes that we see. And I think it probably makes sense to talk about hiring first, for sure, then talking and talking about onboarding, you know, next, and then the coaching big mistakes that we make when we're dealing with teams. So let's talk about the mistakes from the hiring standpoint.
Well, you know, the big one, this is rich too, just the hiring area, but the big one I see out there is that there's a lot of confusion around experience equaling expertise, or that somebody's good just because they're a certain length of time on their resume. That's a big issue I see over and over again, especially given how, you know, we've been in a challenging market for a while because of all the changes and a lot of compliance things. But as far as our sales market, with ever decreasing rates, you know, always down, with, you know, the literally the, what, the recent 6-7 months being the exception, I mean, graph since 1989, and take a look at that, the downward trend in rates. I mean, rates always better for literally more than 2 decades. And that sales environment doesn't, you know, that doesn't mean just because somebody's been able to hang around a while, refinancing their same group of business over and over and over again as rates continue to drop, or even finally, you know, 20 years later, attracting 4 realtors, that doesn't mean that they've got the chops to perform at the level you think they're going to. So you've got to look at other things.
Well, I think in a lot of ways, what you're talking about, that as an industry, we could have farmers and be successful, but we need hunters in a marketplace that has dramatically changed. And I think it's interesting that you point to the overvaluing of experienced originators. I would add the second issue, besides overvaluing experience, I think there's an overvaluing of what lender they work for. If a candidate is, or a team has worked for maybe one of the big banks or whatever it is, and they have a name recognition, smaller sized institutions tend to just assume that the person is trained, that the person is really an effective salesperson. So I think we overvalue experience for sure. And frankly, there's no correlation between how long you have done something and whether you're actually good at it. And when you look at our refinancing market that has gone on so long, we really have a lot of people that are farmers and not hunters. And I think the other side, what lender they worked for is a criteria that really should be taken out of the equation completely. Do you see that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we all think that our competitors are somehow training more than we are. And the reality is, if you even dig deep into most people's training programs, right, you know, there might be a couple days of great speakers at the sales rally, or it could be a couple of webinars that you launched with somebody, you know, either in your training department or maybe somebody external. And you and I both know that information and experiences, the seminar being like an experience, that doesn't translate to skill. You know, information and skill, that's two completely separate things. And of course, you know, the difference is you can take action and create a result when you have the skill. And so, yeah, the whole idea about the training and that's the short circuit. Even if there was somebody who did a lot of training, if they didn't have a manager that, you know, side saddle with them quite a bit, listen to their calls, really worked with them in the real world to turn that information into a skill, then it's just not there. So you can't take that stuff for granted. It's dangerous.
For sure. Well, I think the third thing that I see from the hiring mistakes when they're trying to build a team does center on this issue that the interviewing process is not designed as an evaluation of the candidate in an objective way. It's more of, let's sell that person to join our company. So the overvaluing of experience, the overvaluing of what lender they worked for, and the third issue that I see is that the whole interviewing process is not an evaluation process, but just a selling process of getting someone to join your company, even though that person may not be a match culturally or even from a talent standpoint. So I think those three issues, and especially this issue of making the interviewing process an objective component that includes pre-hires, includes a hiring process, includes a set of behavioral questions. I mean, all of those things need to be part of the interviews. And I don't really see that at a lot of companies. What I see is let's sell them to join us. And really, yep. That's a fatal mistake.
Yep. Yeah. And part of the sell us to join us, you know, the cognitive scientists have proven that our expectation or what we anticipate or what our goal is when we engage in any activity, it doesn't matter if it's hiring people or, you know, just taking a walk in the park. Those are powerful drivers in forming our opinions right. and our experience of whatever we're doing. So inside the hiring, you know, a lot of times people will push back on me. No, I don't hire people that I don't believe in. I don't hire people that I don't think is a fit. And to some extent, I believe that they believe that. You know, I mean, I do believe that they believe that. I think for the listeners, one of the things I would just maybe ponder for a minute is we all know that if you don't hire a certain number of people in any given time, there can be a little bit of heat from management sometimes, the executive suite. We also know that, you know, if we're getting excited and we have some goals to grow, that we'll hit the street and we start recruiting pretty heavy. And that just, you know, it creates these rose-colored glasses and it just tints everything just a little bit better. And that's why, you know, if there's one takeaway from this hiring part of the conversation is any good hiring process has got to have some great, solid third-party feedback or feedback from the assessments and things that you just mentioned that is unbiased and unaffected by the factors that I just talked about. If it's lacking those tools and those things, then it's never going to be as good as it could be.
Well, that's why you have this issue of constant turnover and many lenders. I was just at a lender last week and basically he had 100% turnover. And that's no way that you can be successful with that constant turnover. So let's kind of talk about the next issue, which is onboarding, the big mistakes with onboarding.
Gosh, where do we start with this? I think mistake number one is that we have a very small window to impress upon a new hire exactly the way we do things and to create a healthy set of expectations, what we expect of them and what they can expect from us and getting really granular and getting agreement that we have this right up front. And onboarding processes don't always set expectations like they should or could. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I think people don't connect as well with the culture, but also with the performance. And that's probably missing ingredient number one is just that expectation setting, you know, exercise and processes.
Well, I would like to add the second thing that I see in onboarding is that onboarding is really that period of time where there was a lot of selling before to get the candidate to join you. Now the person's joined you and the manager kind of sits back and just, you know, is relieved that they got one more. And so, but really has forgotten that it's critical to resell the new person that they made the right decision. And instead of just abandoning them to your onboarding team, the manager has to be actively involved with reselling why this person made the correct decision to join you. And when you think about it, why do employees, new employees, become disenchanted and start thinking about they made a mistake? It really is a question of buyer's remorse sets in and the new employee is not convinced that they made the right decision. And by the manager not being in that person, being active with that person after they have been recruited in, is a really big mistake that managers make.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a big one. And you know, the kind of along the same line, I think we get a little worried, especially if we're hiring somebody that is experienced. Let's say we got a 10 plus year loan officer. Another thing that I see is that we forget or we underestimate the amount of support that person needs in onboarding, because we just figure they've been doing it a while. And I've talked to people, you know, they don't want to over micromanage. They don't want to make someone feel like that they don't have confidence in them. And so they kind of do a little bit of a hands-off approach. And that experienced person is still subject to overwhelm. And, you know, switching companies, everybody really shortchanges the amount of work that switching companies entails. Right. It's a massive pipeline disruption. Right. It's very overwhelming. You are learning a ton of new systems over again, the inner workings of a company. I mean, everywhere you turn, you actually need help with something, whether it's just downloading a flyer to take out on Saturday or entering a lock into the pricing engine. Couple that with the fact that you then have to go out and resell your realtors and do that type of stuff. It's like deer in a headlight. And even your seasoned guys need lots of support and lots of direction in that early phase. And the more you give them, you know, then the confidence returns a lot faster. So I think it helps as an antidote to what you just talked about as far as making sure you resell them, get their confidence up. That helps in that area a lot. But then it also it gets them more productive faster and, you know, just positions you, you know, as the team they're going to go to the next level with.
Right. And I'd like to kind of do kind of the flip side to that, that when you're onboarding rookies, okay, let's take the reverse, the person's not experienced, and they've now joined you. I think during the onboarding process, if it's not strong and structured, we make the assumption that when the person is not showing that they have some of the habits and skill sets that we thought they had, then we're letting that person kind of stay in their position too long when the early signs were there that maybe this wasn't the right hire. And I think so with rookies, what I see, I agree with you, with experienced people, they just figure out that's why they hired them so they can get on, you know, to making all these changes. But when it comes to the rookie, I think they're handled in the different way where we just assume, well, it takes them a long time to get it. Well, that you can be waiting years under that strategy. So I do think you're right that the experienced people aren't handled correctly, but I also think the rookies are, you can identify in a very short span of time by the activities the individual is doing and the effort that they're putting in, whether that was the right hiring decision. So that is an advantage that I think onboarding well gives you, is it is a way to really relook at, did you make the right hire?
Yeah, great point. Yeah, very great point. And in my personal experience, I've had that happen. Like, you know, so as I can literally, like names are popping into my head as you walk through that opportunity. Yeah, you know, probably the last one for me to share on this is we also underestimate what it takes to move the real estate and the referral partners over. You know, if you're dealing with us, you know, we just think that the business, you know, we're going to bring a producer over and the business is going to flow in. And the savvy real estate agents, they know that a loan officer is only as good as their support team. And they know that that decision to move has a strong impact on the service levels that they might get from the loan officer. I really think that the hiring manager, whether it's the branch manager, the sales manager, for the larger referral partners, at the very least, lots of attention has to be paid to them. And you've got to have a strategy to make sure that they feel comfortable with the move in order to get the volume jump started.
Well, that's a great point. And I actually was at a lender yesterday going over that same point. And really, the local managers don't really recognize that that transition, not every referral source is going to go with the individual that you now have hired. And so I agree with you 100%. And certainly what I see in the field is that many managers don't really recognize that. And I think that is really a big mistake, because that's where you're onboarding to make sure the transition works well, so the referral sources will come with you. And I see it over and over again that local managers may not really, you know, they just assume that that person's going to bring all the referral sources. It doesn't work that way, and it's unrealistic for sure. Well, I think that leads to the third part of the big mistake on coaching. This is definitely in your wheelhouse. You do it every day. And so when you're hiring and building teams, what's the mistake when it comes to the coaching side of it?
Yeah, mistake number one is this myth about micromanagement, that, you know, you hire good people and you let them do what they do, which to an extent is true, but that doesn't mean that you let them do what they do with no oversight, no support, no encouragement. That idea, usually when I hear that, 9 times out of 10, it's just a manager trying to excuse the fact that they're, you know, they're cutting a corner there. Everybody can do better with people in your wheelhouse, with people in your corner, you know, working for you, encouraging you, helping you keep the right perspective, and nobody is too good for it, period.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And I always use this analogy. If you look at the professional sport teams and football teams as an example, you know, they have, what, 53 players, but on average, each player has roughly between 3 to 15 different coaches.
So
now, why do they do that? Because they just feel like coaching people? They know that coaching people has an impact. And they are, if you think about it, athletes that are at the top of their game, and yet they still need coaching. So I agree with you that coaching is sometimes thought of as micromanaging, and it's not. And when you make that, I would agree that the individual manager is really A, deluding themselves, and B, has to look inward about, you know, why is that occurring?
Yep. It's true. It's true.
So what other things do you see in coaching, when the big mistake in coaching when it comes to, you know, hiring loan officers?
Yeah. So mistake number two would be that people confuse coaching with training or telling somebody how to do it.
That's a good point.
So training, mentoring, managing, those are all separate functions and they all have their place. But coaching is not about telling somebody what to do. And, you know, especially if you've got a manager who believes that the way they're successful is the only way to be successful, or
right,
maybe, or the way the coaching program they attended tells you to do it is the only, you know, that gets problematic and creates some shutdown. So, you know, there's more than one way to be successful, you know, and coaching is about empowering them and helping them keep focus and not telling them what to do next and giving them a task list.
Right. A lot of times what I see with coaching, they are defining it as counseling, basically.
Yes.
And that's where they're focusing on the underperformers as the issue. And coaching them up. I'm sure you've heard this. If I can get one more loan from the underperformer, everything will be fantastic. But coaching the underperformers, and again, this is probably another topic for another podcast, but coaching the underperformers is basically not a good use of time.
No, it is not. And this is tough. I deal with this, you know, all the time, especially when you're talking to executives. They want to coach the underperformers. And, you know, I won't say that there's never an opportunity to coach an underperformer just to see if maybe there's a roadblock or an obstacle that if you removed, it would solve something. But here's the deal. You know, you can't want it more than they want it. And the minute you realize that that's the case, then coaching's not appropriate at that point in time. And coaching them up or coaching them out, that's a human resource terminology. And even though they use the same word, you know, just like there, there, and there, you know, we have three ways to say
right, right.
They're very, you know, different words. And coaching, you know, there's coaching and there's coaching. And coaching up or out, that's a management function. Mm-hmm. Because in that choice, the person no longer has free will. Like, you either improve or you're gone. That is not coaching.
Well, again, this is a topic we need to do another podcast on, because I agree. When you have limited resources, and if you've already identified inconsistent performance or underperformers, it's a self-motivational issue and not a coaching issue. And I think companies waste so much of their resources on trying to coach up when the fact is the person isn't managed. So I agree with you 100%. And as I said, we need to do another podcast with that topic by itself, because there's all kinds of issues. So we're down to our last few minutes today. So Bobby, you want to kind of maybe summarize kind of some of the big mistakes that our listeners can really think about?
Yeah, you know, I'll summarize it this way. Building a team of high-performance loan officers is really about you, the manager, mm-hmm. because, you know, if the listeners kind of take their hand and they put their hand in the pointing the finger, I guess, what do you call it? The pointing the finger setup, like point your finger at something, I guess is what I'm saying. And when you look at your hand, you notice that you are pointing one finger, but there are three fingers pointing right back at you. And so if you've hired somebody and that person doesn't make it, it's important to realize that you hired them, you onboarded them and trained them, or at least you supported that process. And then you coached and supported them down the road. And I guarantee you that if you look at the managers who, you know, get the building of teams right, they are looking at themselves. They don't have conversation, you know, there's no one good out there. You know, they don't point the finger lightly, because they understand how much of a big part they have on it. So, you know, just avoid these common mistakes and train yourself in this area. Become an expert in each of these three. And take them very, very seriously. And, you know, it's really the foundation of something that could pay huge dividends.
Right. I'd like to just add one other thing that you just mentioned. The hiring, the onboarding, and the coaching has changed dramatically over the last 10, 15 years. And so whether you were trained before and you think you know it, I would tell you that it's an expertise that has really shifted with a lot of different type of research showing effective best practices. So I can't agree with you more, Bobby, that this is a topic that as a manager, you are constantly having to be trained on yourself or get your own outside coach to help you with it. So I agree with you 100%. Well, I want to thank everybody for listening today, and certainly join us at our next podcast. And Bobby, thanks for all your insightful comments.
Yeah, thanks, Pat. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening. If you have a topic to suggest, please tell your National MI account manager, and you may soon see it as part of our sales podcast series.